Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Good morning, everyone. It is your Daily Crypto News. It's Friday, March 22nd, 2024. Before we get started today and get into Asia Focus with Sarah Kwan, please do me a favor. Click the link in the show notes for our Substack, or you can just go to Substack and find our Substack. How many times am I going to say Substack? Substack. It's kind of actually hard. And find Daily Crypto News Substack and subscribe. There we post our daily podcast. Obviously, we post a summary of the podcast, but more so is what we post behind the paywall. And we're starting to put more and more episodes up there. 101s, weekly roundups with Sarah and myself, if you find them interesting. Old archive episodes, and, you know, I also put other stuff. I'm very much into politics, I'm into tech, I'm into movies. I'm going to put my thoughts on there as well about different topics. And I really want us to start putting more content about crypto, my thoughts about the markets, and so on and so forth. So at the very least, help me build that out. Go over there, subscribe to our Substack. Saying that damn word again. It's Daily Crypto News. Link is in the show notes. And also, do us a favor, like, subscribe, share, leave us a comment on Apple Podcasts. Click those 5 stars. Now, let's get into Asia Focus.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Asia Focus, a weekly section of Daily Crypto News. I'm Sarah. Almost the end of the March, and hope you enjoyed this week as well. Let's get started. In the previous Asia Focus, we went ahead and tried to find where Bitforex is in Hong Kong, the exchange that went dark with $57 million in customer deposit last month. While Bitforex has registered offices in Hong Kong, there has been no sign the venture ever occupied any of the addresses it provided. And now, the city's Commercial Crime Bureau is looking into Bitforex. The story is hilarious. Carl, one of the investors from Australia, said that people saw their deposits and funds disappear in real time. The Bitforex team was available for communication the whole time until they weren't. They said it's just a maintenance time, but they never came back after all. The CEO of Bitforex, Jason Low, is also missing, of course. This seems like just another scam, but there is someone who is looking into this, so let's see how this is going to end. Grab, the super app offers taxi, food delivery, and digital payments, is now letting users make payments with cryptocurrencies. Grab has partnered with licensed payments provider AAA to enable users to top up their GrabPay wallet via digital payment tokens. Currently available in Singapore, Grab will continue to monitor user adoption and respond to demand for such services, according to the statement released. So people in Singapore, please use GrabPay more so that it can be spread out through Asia. Users can pay using 5 cryptocurrencies: Bitcoin, Ethereum, XSGD, this is Straight Axis Singapore dollar-backed stablecoin, Circle's USDC and Tether's USDT stablecoins. This is a great example of crypto use cases. Grab is now at around $40 billion valuation and has over 35 million monthly users. I've used various taxi apps across Asia and delivery apps, and now in Europe as well. And I dare say Grab is the best out there. In the next corner, I brought an article from the New York Times. It's not so usual. As you know, the way they write an article is quite different, of course. But cut to the chase. Basically, it depicts the everyday life of some Filipinos who are taking Web3 gaming very seriously, like as their full-time job. Remember we heard similar stories in the last bull cycle featured by Axie Infinity? And they are now back. These games, similar to Axie Infinity, reward players with cryptocurrency for completing small daily challenges. Often, players convert their tokens to pesos, the country's currency, earning around twice the Philippines' minimum wage of $11 a day. For example, of this hype, the Philippine player base for a Web3 game, Pixels, spiked to over 830,000 in March from 80,000 players in November, according to the game's developers. About 30% of the world's crypto-earning video games are also based in the Philippines, they said. Crypto became especially popular in the Philippines during pandemic lockdowns. While over 40% of the country's population does not have a bank account, the majority of Filipino households have internet access, which has allowed crypto to spread to rural areas. There are not just one way of earning money through crypto gaming. There are educators, there are streamers, there are guilds. All in all, it seems like a good opportunity to them. I really appreciate this kind of research where I could see how crypto is adopted in each country. For example, in Korea, obviously, we had a very deep-rooted culture of stock trading. So that's where a lot of these retailers coming into the crypto market in the beginning, because we love risk assets. And we can even analyze how people trade crypto as well, according to that kind of culture. And you can see some other countries. I see maybe India or African countries. There are a lot of people coming into crypto because they're very good at marketizing crypto projects. And there are quite a lot of crypto influencers, so-called Twitter influencers, coming into crypto because they write a good thread. And they also make a ton of money out of it. And now here we have it. Filipinos coming into crypto market because there is a play to earn going crazy in the Philippines. I would love to know how you guys got into the crypto in your own country. Email us, sarah@dailycryptonews.net. Uzbekistan's National Agency for Prospective Projects, NAPP, has issued a new directive to increase the monthly fees for crypto market participants in the country. The mandate was given on Tuesday, March 19, 2024. Under the updated fee system, crypto exchanges face a monthly fee of 740 BRV, basis reference value, equivalent to 251.6 million Uzbekistani sum, which is around $20,015, which is almost a double the previous fee of 400 BRV or 136 million sum. That was around $10,000. BRV is primarily used to calculate various financial transactions, including taxes, fees, and fines. Uzbekistan does not have a surprising stance to cryptocurrency, similar to other countries. People can buy and sell cryptocurrency at licensed exchange at their own risk, but you can't use Bitcoin as a payment currency. NAPP recently signed an MOU with stablecoin issuer Tether, but they are planning on suing Binance for operating in Uzbekistan without a proper license. It's not so often that I get to see some news in Central Asia, so there you go. That's all for today.
And moving into some other news, this is going to be a long episode because these next two, well, I have three stories, but two of them are very interesting. And so first, let's get this Hecko Bridge exploit out of the way. Hackers who have exploited the Hecko Bridge Hackers who exploited the Hekla Bridge last year have laundered more than 40,000 ETH, or around $145.7 million, through Tornado Cash over the past 8 days, according to on-chain data. The November 2023 Hekla Bridge hack resulted in a loss of around $111 million. Wintermule's head of research suggested that there was an additional exploit at HTX at the time, where around $23.4 million was taken. And so they are using Tornado Cash to get this money out. Again, the debate of should Tornado Cash even exist is still out there. Should we have a way to obfuscate our transactions so nobody knows where the funds are going? Not a bank, not even in a siloed institution where somebody in the back end could say, okay, they transfer money from here to here and it could be recalled if subpoenaed. Of course, everything in crypto is on-chain, so there's really nothing that you can hide, and that's why these exist. So there are good reasons why Tornado Cash exists. Imagine if you were a company that was going to pay a supplier with some sort of on-chain transaction just because it's faster and easier, then you don't want everybody to see what you're paying for certain goods or services, right? We can go down the rabbit hole of how many reasons why this should exist. But then again, we can go and just see things like this and say, hey, how are we going to catch people if they obfuscate the transactions and then launder money and we don't even know where those transactions are going to? I want your opinion, matt@dailycryptonews.net, or head over to Substack and leave us a comment and I'll reply. The best thing about Substack is that when you comment, I can reply. It's like we can just start a text group, actually. If you want, let's start a group. Let's talk about these different stories. I'd love to get into it. Layer Zero's CEO and co-founder, Brian Pellegrino, alleged on Thursday that Kyle Davies, co-founder of 3 Arrows Capital, remember the person who doesn't want to apologize for losing everybody's money, attempted to lure Layer Zero to allocate the project's entire treasury to its now defunct crypto hedge fund just days before it imploded. Like I said, Davies refuses to apologize. He says, "We are traders who devoutly believe in up only forever. Still do. Lenders choose to gamble their own low-risk clients' funds on a high-risk thesis," which I want to say that is a very good point. You build a company, you have your funds, and this is their job. They're a hedge fund. They want to say, hey, put your funds with us. We're going to figure some stuff out. They know it's a risk. And if you have your low-risk clients' funds and you're going to put it into something that's riskier, who's at fault there? Now, again, I'm not defending Kyle Davies. I'm just saying it's just we see this all the time. Banks do it all the time. They take low-risk the client funds and they put it into risky allocations or riskier allocations. That's what we saw in the 2008 financial crisis. It wasn't low risk lens. It was high risk lens. Why? Because they wanted to make money. This happens all the time. Not saying it's right. Brian Pellegrino replied to what Davies just said about low risk and high risk thesis. He said, "I would agree with this 100% and would be in your corner, except for the fact that you try to get us to give you our entire treasury promising better rates than our other borrowers as a last grasp effort just days before you blew up. Getting liquidated is one thing. Lying and exploiting your friends and other people around you is another. So yes, just lenders would have been okay. That's their business."
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
But that's not what happened. As Crypto Hayes, he's talking about Arthur Hayes, as Crypto Hayes or any of the others you scammed to try to save yourselves. And so what he's saying is Kyle Davies absolutely knew the status and the health of their company. And he was trying to get these people to put their and allocate their funds into the company to see if they can save it and keep it afloat. Lucas Computer replied to Brian Pellegrino and said, "Why does it matter if it was just days before they blew up? Before they blew up, they were solvent. Are solvent funds not allowed to raise? Are they supposed to just predict the blow up and stop? If they could predict it, don't you think they would have and avoided it in the first place? Brian Pellegrino replied to this and said, they were not solvent. They just hadn't been called yet by the lenders and the cascade hadn't happened. This is like saying FTX was still solvent as long as users didn't try to withdraw and realize that there was no money left. And that's my biggest point with this, is were they running a company with fiduciary duty to in due diligence and they were trying to run a proper hedge fund? And they got caught up with like FTX and Luna and all that stuff and it collapsed because everybody else collapsed at the same time, which a lot of companies just went under because Luna and FTX collapsed. Or were they absolutely criminal and negligent and irresponsible with their company? Again, I haven't had a clear answer on this. And so we see what Brian Pellegrino says. And the more Brian Pellegrinos come out and start saying like what happened behind the scenes and what they feel like the irresponsibility of Kyle Davies and Su Ju were, then we will understand what happened with the company. Again, I haven't been looking too much into this because I don't really care. However, this is coming to light because now Kyle Davies is back out there. He's making his rounds on podcasts. I don't know what he's trying to do. Is he going to try to start a new fund because we have a bull run? Maybe. I mean, they already tried to start a new company right after the fall of 3-year-old capital. So we got to get to the bottom of this. Were they malicious? Were they just dumb? Were they complicit? Or was it bad luck and they got caught up in the fall of FTX, Luna, and other crypto companies that brought them down as well, which we saw happen to other companies? If anybody has some more info on that, let me know. Matt@dailycryptonews.net or on Substack. And finally, which I think is a super interesting conversation, this is about the Bitcoin miners in Texas. The title of this one is Bitcoin Miners, $640 million mega deal stumbles as Texans sour on the industry's promise of jobs and growth. And this is super interesting. Bear with me here. On March 11th, four county commissioners took their places in the courtroom in Texas at Corscana, Texas, and delivered a blow to one of the biggest Bitcoin miners. They're talking about Riot Platforms. The Navarro County commissioners declined to approve a reinvestment zone for Riot Platforms' newest operation, which would be the largest Bitcoin mining facility in Texas. The commissioner's office received a slew of emails, text messages, and even personal visits from residents opposing the deal. There's been a lot of controversy around Bitcoin mining's outsized consumption of water and electricity. Even though Texas has number one in Bitcoin mining, they've only created 2,000 permanent full-time jobs in all of Texas. And there's 15 million workers in Texas. And they're asking, why are we incentivizing them? Why are we giving them tax abatements, is what they're going to say, if they're not creating that many jobs? There's nothing controversial about tax abatements. It's usually to attract industries in states and counties and cities. And cities use these tax abatements to attract manufacturers, distribution centers, shopping mall development, and all kinds of other businesses. Basically, they're saying like, hey, if you set up shop here, you don't have to pay taxes, or you pay a significant reduced amount of taxes. And so Texas is saying that we're not getting a good deal here. Like, yeah, you got tax abatements, you're over here making money, but where are the jobs? Where's all this growth that you were going to promise us? But in fact, what Texas is saying is you're just using a lot of electricity. Texas's power bill has increased by around $1.8 billion, according to data analyst provider Wood Mackenzie. There's a never-ending noise, according to his neighbors, and that's caused by 80,000 whirring air-cooled computers mining Bitcoin. Riot did say that they're going to address the sound problem, even though that might have been, in my opinion, probably talked about beforehand. Several counties have issued water restrictions for residents in 2023, and this year the state reservoirs are already approaching new record lows. However, Riot's facility is expected to consume about 1.5 million gallons of water daily during the height of the summer. This facility is going to use more water than a candy factory, a glass factory, and the iron smelt combined. In the United States, Bitcoin miners are consuming an annual 93 to 120 gigaliters of water via indirect and direct means. Again, I defend the Bitcoin mining industry. If you have an industry and people and there's a demand, then yeah, you should be able to set up your business. But setting up a water heavy industry like that in Texas does not seem smart. I mean, if that was in Ohio, we have the Great Lakes here. Use all the water you want. We're not going to run out. You're absolutely fine. And honestly, I don't know why more miners don't come over here to Ohio. We have cheap electricity. I know it has a lot to do with solar. We're always cloudy here, so yeah, that might be it, but we have lots of water. We have cheap electricity if you want to buy it from the grid, and we have plenty of land. And if you're going to locate down in, say, Cleveland, there's a lot of places where you can find like acres and acres of land of old businesses that moved out of Cleveland. So coming to Ohio, maybe, but the residents might be pissed by the 80,000 whirring machines that you decided not to put soundproofing around. That's probably something you should have thought of. But the biggest thing is, like, okay, you get these tax abatements, you're over here, you're using all our water, you're using our electricity, you're making it uncomfortable for everybody because we have to hear those machines, but you're not really providing many jobs. The crypto mining industry is certainly not a labor-intensive industry. You don't get a whole lot. It doesn't generate a lot of extra business, and no one has to be near a Bitcoin mine to even do anything there. It doesn't matter where the Bitcoin mine is located. For example, Riot has a market cap of around $3.1 billion and has 534 employees. Marathon, which has a market cap of around $6 billion, Marathon, also a Bitcoin mining giant, has a workforce of 60. Sunnyside Digital has around a 300-megawatt facility and only employs 1 to 2 full-time employees per 3 to 5 megawatts, or somewhere between 60 and 200 employees work for Sunnyside. And so where are the jobs? And people are upset because, yeah, fine, they're making jobs, but are they jobs here in the communities? It might not help the local communities. These are people from outside that come here once in a while. You can create a position and it's filled by somebody from outside who flies in once a month and does a little bit of work and then flies back to wherever they live. Taxes are paid wherever they live, not where they are here in our community. So where's the jobs for the local community members? In a 2-page document seen by DL News and shared with the residents, Marathon Digital said they're going to hire up to 30 local employees for that site, including one community manager, and it will generate $2 million of annual tax contributions. But is that worth it for the tax abatements that seem to be totaling in the tens of millions of dollars? Anyway, it's a very interesting conversation. I personally hate tax abatements. I understand why they're used, but if you just had a fair tax system within your region and everybody paid low taxes and you actually just had people influx in because of, oh, it's just a great place to live with low taxes, but great amenities and so on and so forth, you can make it fair. What happens is you get tax abatements to these big companies and then the local population is just like, well, this doesn't seem right. I'm paying high taxes. I'm doing all this stuff, but this company gets away with paying no taxes. And again, here, bringing really no jobs. Is it really worth it? The other problem I see with these things is that when you have more and more automation, which is coming, AI, automated checkouts for everything, less people are going to be employed. And so what is now the new threshold of bringing jobs? I'm not too sure, because work is changing, and work is changing very quickly. Anyway, well, you know what else changes very quickly? Those crypto prices. Let's get into it.
Here comes the money.
Here we go. Money talk.
And the time is 10:37 a.m. Eastern, Daylight Savings Time. Fear greed is at 79. It's greedy, not extremely greedy, because we had a huge pullback in the market. I did not see this one coming, to be honest with you. Bitcoin's in at $63,213, down 5.6% in 24. Ethereum's at $3,316, down 6.4%. Teller's number 3. Binance is at 548, down 2.5%. And Solana is at 169. Down 10.5. Is that a good entry point for some of you? Running off the top 10, we have XRP, USDC, Cardano, Doge, and Avalanche. The total market cap is down almost 6% at $2.4 trillion. Bitcoin dominance of 51.6 and the ETH dominance of 16.6. And this is an interesting time of the year. Normally around tax season, we see a big dip in the market. I don't know what that is, if people are taking money out to pay the taxes that they had from last year, or they are just stopping investment because they are saying, hey, let me figure out my taxes, let me figure out my position and how I'm going to proceed for the rest of the year. And we have a big, a little bit of pullback or a little bit of a lull when it comes to investing and number going up. And so this is kind of normal for this time of year. It's a little early, in my opinion. We usually see that in April. This is not unheard of. And if we have the halving coming at the same time as taxes being due, you might have a double whammy of the halving, because remember, when Bitcoin halving happens, number usually goes down for a little bit while everybody's trying to figure out what's the halving going to mean, from the miners to the investors to the market to everything. Bitcoin gets a big pullback, and now that's going to correlate with tax season, with taxes being due. We might have a double whammy. So that's what I'm predicting. I'm predicting that, now that I'm thinking about it a little bit more, that we might be well into the $50,000 range because it's just going to give us a double whammy. So if you're going to stack sets, now might be the time. This was a long episode, but I enjoyed it. I hope you did too. We'll see you on Monday. Oh, and get to our Substack. Happy hodling, everyone.
Even on a budget, Quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.